Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Michigan at the 41. What a hit! Ball's free! On the ground! South Carolina deserves to have it, and they do!
It is Wednesday, June 22nd, and we have another edition of Believe in South Carolina. I am Mike Yuva, and alongside me, as always, is Nick Klaus and former Gamecock running back Marcus Lattimore. Fellas, we are getting closer and closer. We're getting closer, a month away until SEC Media Days, and then a couple weeks after that, we go right into training camp. Since we last taped an episode, we have found out that the first day of practice for the Gamecocks will be August 5th. So we're getting closer to it.
I just got hot thinking about that.
You just got hot thinking about it?
August 5th in Columbia, South Carolina. And I'm telling you, that is the separator. I was just talking to a guy here in Portland. Who comes from the East Coast and was talking about East Coast versus West Coast football. And it's literally it's how we're developed. It's the conditions that we're put under. It's just hot as shit, and you have to find a way to push through. But no, that's exciting. August 5th. Yes, it is right around the corner.
No, it's coming. It's close. I mean, I was today just before we were recording, I've been just kind of going through anything new on Gamecock football, and I read a few articles on Rattler, and Rattler just did a podcast, so I was learning a lot about what he said on that, and that just It just gets you excited. You can tell he's excited, and you know, it's just like, you know, being a fan and going to this school, you just kind of become a little kid again. And the fact that I just felt like excited just to see Spencer Rattler in a Gamecock uniform coming soon. And also, I read an article about Clemson and South Carolina and how it was a Clemson writer who did it. And they were talking about the whole little brother thing and how we're not even close to them. So that'll piss you off. And
that's strategic though, Nick. Like, don't they do writers do that on purpose, right?
Oh yeah. Oh,
some
yeah.
of them do. Some of them do. TV people, they're the same way where you kind of poke things around a little bit. I think we all know that. I can tell you that because I have come across many in this profession. You know, there's some that are very good at it too. But there's some that are just straight fanboys. That's honestly one of my favorite parts about covering the Gamecocks now is even when I was working at Watch Fox, but obviously now Gamecock Central, Clemson fans try to, where they think they're getting under my skin saying, oh, you know, seven in a row. And this, I'm like, you realize, like, I don't give a shit. I'm not a Gamecock fan. I didn't go to USC. I want to see people that you develop relationships do well. I'm going to get more pissed off if you say something about the Patriots. But honestly, I don't really get too upset anymore. I've seen more championships in my lifetime than some people, their fathers and their granddaddies will ever see in their lifetime. So, I mean, I'm running out of championship. I was disappointed seeing the Celtics lose the other night, but I'm like, you know what? Shoot, I can't get upset anymore.
I hate Boston.
But I want to, let's bring it back. I want to bring something up. It's all right, Nick. Hey, they hate us because they ain't us, baby. I want to bring it back to the Heat, Marcus, because just yesterday we did a Garnet Trust virtual event with transfer defensive end Terrell Dawkins. And Terrell was just smiling, talking about the Heat because, you know, even though he wasn't playing too far away, playing at North Carolina State, he shared what these workouts have been like. And he said the Heat down here, it's just different, right? It's just different. And the way that you train is different. Now, we know that the first game of the year will be under the lights. But that second game at Arkansas, that will be 11 a.m. local time. That third game will be at 12 against Georgia, that third game of the season. So, you know, most likely, you know, the humidity will be in there that night game. But I bring that all back, Marcus, because when you look back to those summer workouts, how beneficial were they in terms of dealing with the heat? Because as an athlete, obviously you're trying to just get those workouts done. You just want to be able to push through them. The heat obviously is a pain in the ass, but how much does that help you come week one, week two, week three, the beginning of the year, when you do have to face not just the opponent, but you're dealing with the heat as well?
Isn't that crazy though? He went to North Carolina State, which is only max 3 hours away from Columbia. And the heat is that big of a difference.
That
you know, and, you know, people really don't understand it until you're in Columbia. I think the saying is it's the armpit of the South. I don't really like that statement because it's kind of derogatory and it paints a bad picture of my city. But
we could say it feels like.
Feels like the armpit of the South. Yeah, I get that. But yeah, it's just a. I don't like that. I don't like that label on Columbia. But no, I mean, if you don't, while you're out there in the summer, if you survive, if you make it, and that is a serious statement, man, it's more of a mental thing than anything, but because you really just get to a point where your body will eventually become acclimated. It just takes a long time. But I think it makes a difference, particularly early on with those three games that you mentioned. As October rolls around, everything starts to smooth out. But August and September, those two months, really anywhere down south, you're going to these places, you're going to Georgia, and you've been training in Columbia, you have an advantage. You really do. I mean, your body is a lot more conditioned, and we have to use that to our advantage. It's the secret weapon that nobody has simply because they're not in Columbia. And, it just makes you a lot tougher. That's the one thing that I can say for sure. You are tougher when you step out on the field because it's just what you've been going through over the past summer. I mean, it's excruciating. You're out there running. And I mean, sometimes you got weights out there. Sometimes you're competing in it. It's just a whole different element that, you can't replicate anywhere else. I see it as a huge advantage.
Did you feel that as a player though? Because during the Muschamp era, something that was interesting was the fact that during some of those noon games, the earlier games, they won a lot. I mean, I know that you were over there during a period of time under Muschamp, but it seemed like there was either a sense of, you know, between the fact of practicing early, doing the early practices, because I know not every team in the country practices essentially first thing in the morning. But between that, dealing with the heat, it looked like USC would either come out and play extremely well, even if they didn't win, they would play very well. I mean, even the Alabama game, they pushed Alabama to the brinks for a while. And then, of course, you know, Alabama was just able to pull away. We saw what they were able to do against Georgia on the road, and that was an early game. So I know that there's going to be a lot of fans that will look at that week three game against Georgia, and they'll be upset. Like, I understand you want to be able to tailgate all day. I get that. I understand. Oh, well, I don't want to sit in the stand and die and for the heat. I get that. But from an advantage standpoint, would you say that this could be beneficial for South Carolina because they're playing early and they're playing in an environment from a heat standpoint that they're going to be more accustomed to in comparison to maybe a Georgia who isn't too far away, but it's just not going to be the exact same type of training that they're going through?
It's not. It's not the same. It's really not. You know, Georgia is Georgia. Georgia's going to show up. They're going to be ready to play. They have a great head coach, and they have tons of talent. You know, so the Georgia game is I'll tell you what, it's going to be a good test. I do believe if we, you know, you get them on the ropes early.
Mm-hmm.
You get them on the ropes early. When the third or fourth quarter come around and you're playing in that type of heat, you don't rise to the level of occasion. You don't mm-hmm. rise to the level. I love this quote. It's by Jocko. You revert back to your level of training. You don't rise. You revert back to your default mode. And our default mode is going to be conditioned for that. But with the defending national champions, you got to get them on the ropes early. You know, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter how good of a shape you're in. I mean, they're a beast down there. And we all know that. I mean, that's not a secret to anybody. But, yeah, I think it does, Mike. I think any team that comes to Columbia in the month of September, it's going to have, I mean, it just they just have a hard time in early October. They just have a hard time. You unite, the crowd is into it, and you got that going on. It's just not the conditions you want to be in as a visitor. Just tough. Tough place to play.
And as they come in, I mean, especially we just said Georgia is Georgia. And it's no news to anyone. They're extremely talented, and they're getting better. I mean, they just won a national championship. They're only going to get better. They're going to get better talent. They're going to keep getting five stars, we all know from Coach Beamer's press conference last year. But you got to play any advantage you can. And the fact that Columbia is hot as hell in August and September, you know, that'll be an advantage. And especially because I've been saying this to a lot of people, the first three games for the Gamecocks this year are so crucial. I mean, you got that first game, which obviously needs to be a win, needs to be a commanding win. And then Arkansas is huge. It's huge. I've wanted to talk about that for a while. It's just that game.
Oh, it's a swing game.
It is. I mean, you go, you're either going in 1-1 unranked into a home game against the defending national champion, or if you were able to pull off a win in Arkansas, you're 2-0. I think easy top 25. We got a ranked game at Willie B against the Bulldogs.
Against a team that outside of Alabama, when you're talking about who could give them a run for their money, there's a lot of people that believe Arkansas is a team that could be finishing high in the West, potentially number two, if not being able to win the SEC West.
They're similar to us, like in the West. When it comes to the East, like it's just. It's one of those places that, you know, when you go, you number one, you don't expect the crowd that you're about to see because you just don't hear a lot about Arkansas football. But it has that rich tradition.
Mm-hmm.
They run the football. That head coach has instilled toughness. They step on the field and they really believe that they can beat anybody. You know, so I mean, Arkansas, that's going to be a game.
It's South Carolina, huge. It really is so huge.
What we'll do, Nick, sorry to cut you off. What we'll 100%. Do is we'll get into an episode where we break down some of these games and take a closer look. But I wanna go back to that though, Marcus. When you're talking about right now on campus, the majority of the team, if not everyone, is on campus right now. Which is just absolutely incredible because this team is just locked in. And we had Jacob August on a couple weeks ago, and you know, he was talking about that 2017 season and being able to go to the Outback Bowl and be able to win. He felt that the majority of the team was bought in. that they were bought in at that point, that they were having meetings on off campus going into the year saying, okay, you know, what do we need to do? What do we need to do to be able to be successful this season? And some of the leaders on that team. And he just felt like over time that started to, that got away. I bring all that up because you hear from these players right now that are on campus, guys are truly bought into what Beamer is doing and the coaching staff. Obviously, starting with Beamer, trickle down to Luke Day, the strength and conditioning coach, but just across the board. What's going on right now from a chemistry standpoint when you are on campus and you're working together? But on top of that, what are these workouts looking like as you get ready for a new season?
Well, the progression has increased every week. You know, if they were here in May, they're probably already continuing that plan that they had. And, you know, once June hit and the whole team was together, oh, it's an 8-week plan of getting you from here to there. And when I say, I'm talking about all your numbers, you know, you're trying to get your bench up, you're trying to get your squad up, power clean. Individually, you know, because it's Luke Day and that staff, I mean, the strength staff has a lot of manpower. You know, not only do they have assistant strength coaches, but they have GAs, and these GAs are strength coaches. Don't let that term GA fool you. No, they're in the weight room. They're right beside them.
Look at Byron. When we had Byron on just a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I mean, he was labeled a GA, and he had a lot of experience.
No doubt. You are ready to go after you leave a D1 program as a GA. You are ready to become assistant strength coach because your hand is in everything. You're making the shakes. You're making individualized plans. If guys want to stay after and get some extra work, you're the one who's probably doing it. They get the ins and outs of everything. They're sitting in every meeting with Luke Day, soaking in all of that knowledge. But ever since June started, the workouts have ramped up, you know. Mm-hmm. So right now, I mean, with conditioning, if we're just speaking of conditioning, I mean, they're probably at 60-70% of where they're going to be, you know, because they get a little break. They get a little break coming up, but not too much. And, you know, as far as chemistry and that continuity that's growing in the locker room, I think Demo comes in huge right here. I think they had the Rams defensive line coach come in, and he was a speaker for the team. So Demo is setting up all that. He is, you know, putting together groups, you know, all of these different things that grow the team. You know, all these things that you could do to grow the team. He's setting up all of that, all of the culture. You know, him and Coach Beamer combined, and they meet weekly. And you know, this is a real big time, and you know, he's out there with him as well. You know, so. And then, like you mentioned, Coach Jacob August, I'm pretty sure there's individual meetings going on as well. You know, just with position groups, but. I mean, when it comes to the workouts and developing as a team, I mean, they're hanging out. They're hanging out all over the place. They're with
each other. Some of the coach's house. I mean, we just saw a photo today from Marcus Satterfield's wife, Sarah. She just posted on Twitter having the tight ends and running backs over. They had the quarterbacks over recently. And we've seen it at Shane Beamer's house as well. Like the offense came one day, and then the defense came another.
I mean, that's so important, right? It's so important to separate from the game for a little bit. You know, if you're all in, and I think this applies to anything. If you never have a time to disconnect from your career or your I mean, just what you do for a living. If you never have, you never get a fresh perspective. Like you never get to see it from a new light. You know, and I think it's important because fresh ideas come, and you know, for the players, it's just a It's just a rejuvenated, you know, sense of energy when you do something different, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that happens in, you know, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's, you know, when I was back, when we were there, I mean, we go to Strom and shoot, go to Strom and swim. I mean, just a new activity. And I'm pretty sure that's being implemented, you know, with Luke Day and, you know, all of those things are being thought of.
Yeah, they still do that. I see Jordan Birch balling at Strom with a bunch of the guys all the time. They're there all the time. Whenever they got free time. Oh, my gosh. The funny thing is they're running, like, sometimes if they don't have enough to play each other, they'll run just pickup in Strom. Like, there's always people waiting. And, oh, my gosh. Just the level of talent and just
there's some studs. I mean, Birch was great. Birch was great in high school. I remember covering him when I was at Watch Fox when he played at Hammond. I mean, he was good. And then, I mean, everyone that you talk to on the football team, and we did this during the Garnet Trust interviews during the NBA finals, I was asking a lot of these players, like, all right, you know, who would be your starting five? And everyone said, like, the first person, Josh Van. So, no, I think that's, it's important. I mean, and Nick, you know, from a student standpoint, like you said, you've seen these players, whether it be at Strum and, you know, playing basketball. And I mean, I understand it could probably be a little intimidating sometimes if you're just a regular student and you just see a bunch of big football players just around. But I mean, those are the little things that help build championship teams.
No doubt.
No, and I've in my time, it's mostly in my senior year, honestly. I mean, like, Marshawn Lloyd would come to some of my fraternity's parties and he would hang out and he would come bring a bunch of guys. I think Van came once, Bell, a bunch of different guys have come and they're all great guys and they're super nice. And they honestly, they're working so hard that they, you know, when they finally find a time where they just get to relax and let loose, they're just excited to do it. They don't care where they're going. I mean, they love Lloyd's great. He does not, because you know, you have people coming up to you all the time and it's drunk college kids and they're just excited. It's a football player and South Carolina football is so loved. And and Marcus obviously knows about all of this, but he's so good at dealing with it. And he's always happy to talk about it, but he's also relaxing. So you want to let him do his thing. And you know, we've talked about the heat and the workouts they're going through all the time. And like, sometimes they just stop by to hang out and they still got to go and they had to practice that morning or they got to do that night. Like they're just trying to fit in some fun that day, but, and they're doing it together and they're just trying to, you know, be students also and just be young guys. So it's good to see them. And it's those little things, like you said, that they get to do together and also play basketball and you see them around and it's fun. It definitely is intimidating because like Lloyd's a hoss. Like, oh my gosh.
They don't look like tennis players when they walk in.
I mean, we talk about the lifting they're doing and oh my gosh, these guys.
Can we stay with lifting though?
Huge.
Marcus, can you, we've mentioned it before and I always think it gets so overlooked. I think some fans get it. Just how important the strength and conditioning coach is, but especially this time of the year, because the strength and conditioning coach is around these players more than any other coach on this team. You could also say Demo, but the strength and conditioning coach, he's around them the entire freaking year. The great teams that you've been on, even going back to the time when that beautiful run that USC was on that you were a part of, what makes a successful strength and conditioning coach in your opinion? And how important does that role play on having a successful team?
It's what you said, the first statement you said, they're around more than any other coach. When you spend time, and I mean, that's almost it's more than 330 days out of the year that you're around the strength coach out of 365. if you spend the most time around, he has to be a mentor. Number one, he has to be a mentor. He has to be a teacher. All right. And then a coach, you know, and then he has to know the science behind the body. That's obviously important, but it's the difference maker. It's the one thing that can't be like, it can't be up for draw. It just can't be up for luck, you know, who that is, because it's literally what you said, the guy you spend the most time with. So, I mean, out of anybody in your life, really, you know, at that time period in your life, at that time period, and it's, I mean, you catch guys on good days, you catch guys on bad days, however you want to define that. You catch guys that just broke up with the, I mean, you in that weight room, when they walk in, you see every different emotional state. And you got to know how to manage that as a strength coach.
How do you develop that trust, though? Because Luke Day comes in, and you've said this before, right? I think it's a great line. They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah.
For Luke Day, and this could be for any coach, but especially for that position, how are you able to earn the trust and vice versa? Because you have a group of individuals, especially the upperclassmen, who need to set the tone. The way they respond is going to be the way that the underclassmen respond as well, because they're going to say, okay, if a senior or junior is responding this way, that's how I guess we do things around here. Exactly. How do you build that trust, though? Because in just 1 year, it seems like a lot of people are bought into what Luke Day is doing.
No doubt. Well, and I think he comes at it from his way, you know, and you can't try to be anybody else. You know, that's for certain. And everybody's going to come at it from their own personality type on how to direct and guide young men. You know, you're going to come at it from your personal experience, and that you just have to pull from that. You have to pull from that. You can't, if you weren't at Alabama or you weren't at, you know, Georgia, you know, you can't pretend as if you were, you know? So number one, I mean, really just pull from your personal experience and be yourself. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing right there. That's the layer where you can, okay, if you establish that and they know that you're a corny individual that likes country music, but you care about them, they don't care. They don't care. They don't care who you are. They just want to know who you are. And I mean, that's like, once you establish that, man, I think you've won half the battle. You know, if you like rap music and, you know, you study science in your free time, like whatever you do, your quirks or your interest, share that with the team.
Be authentic, because you can read that, right?
You can be authentic. Read it. Absolutely. And I mean, that
they're not forcing it, right? They're not trying to, you know, it's always one of my favorite GIFs you see on Twitter. And by the way, I'm a GIF guy. I don't say GIF. I'm a GIF. You know, you have the guy walking up with the backwards hat and the skateboard, you know, how do you kids do, you know, he's trying to be like an undercover cop. So I say that because you can sense, I'm sure you've been around certain situations. It doesn't have to necessarily be the head strength guy. You know, they're trying to force things. Could be music, could be just the way they talk, could be, you know, the things that they do. Have to be authentic. You could read BS. You could read right through that.
Oh my goodness. And that, and more than anything, that group, like particularly when you're developing them to become bigger, stronger, faster, and better men. You know, so that's your assignment. That's what you're doing as a strength coach. They are listening to everything that you have to say, whether it looks like it or not, whether they seem interested in what you're saying, they're listening to everything. And if there is something that is off, if they hear something that feels a little bit phony, you've lost them. You've lost them, and you have to figure out a way to regain that trust. But I mean, the importance of it, Mike, it's the make or break. I mean, I go back to my high school. Everybody that I know that went to my high school who is now in the profession of sports.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody sees our strength coach as our role model. Coach Bentley, absolutely. He made the town of Duncan, South Carolina. He made it what it is. But when he hired Coach Schrock, everything changed. When we got to Carolina, we had Coach Fitz and Coach Conley. Mm-hmm. Those two men, they did it in their way. You know, Coach Conley, he's from New England. You know, and, you know, grew up in Maine, New Hampshire, mm-hmm. Massachusetts. He grew up in all of those areas. And he brought that with him. Like, he brought that attitude, that personality, that stories from snowmobiling in four or five feet of snow. I mean, that, like, he brought himself. And, I mean, we did everything. We would run through a brick wall for him. You know, simply because he wasn't trying to act like he was from down south or act like he was from wherever. I mean, he was just himself, and it was just a beautiful marriage, and everything. It's the difference maker. You walk in that room, and I mean, because at the end of the day, that room is what's making you. That room is what's making you the player that you are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what you do in there, what you do in there, the focus, the attention you have in there. I mean, the level of the like desire, it's all based on the strength coach. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I think Luke Day is bringing that. Yeah. I mean, you could just tell. You just tell who he is.
Nick, when you hear that, what's the first thing that just comes to mind? Anything stand out?
I mean, I was really just thinking about, you know, the impact that Marcus was talking about how much they impact each player. And it's kind of interesting because when I think back in my high school years and then also my time at Tampa, the short time that it was, the strength coaches do, and coaches in general have a big influence on how you feel about yourself, because you're right. I mean, you're 18 years old, you're going through different things. I know when I was at Tampa, I obviously wasn't happy. I was trying to figure out my place. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I remember one time, the moment where I actually did feel really at home at Tampa for a little bit was when one of our coaches in the weight room, we have, you know, you're in a big weight room, there's a lot going on. And I'm squatting, I think. And I wasn't putting up weight. I was also much smaller then.
Come on, Nick, how much you pushing, man?
Then I don't even know. But I mean, I was always big on making sure, hey, I might not be doing a lot, but make sure my form's good.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure I'm staying on top of that, trying to do my best. And the coach is walking by and he's getting me hype. He's getting the team around me, pointing me out, and he made me feel confident and good about myself, and I wanted to work harder because that made me feel so good, and I felt part of the team and I felt like this family, and I wanted to work hard for it, and that had a huge impact on me. And so those types of things are just so huge, and like Marcus was saying, I mean, you're seeing them so often. Those are the people. Like, I barely talk to my head coach at Tampa, barely. I talk to the training coaches all the time. I talk to my assistant coaches all the time. And so those were the people around me, and they had an impact on me. So, and also just being, I think being honest and genuine as a person is so huge just for everyone in everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you smell bullshit from any person, why are you going to, like, why would you trust that person?
There we go.
That's just how it is.
It goes back to the laws of being human, you know, but I don't know, man. It's just, it's so important. Like, it's so important. And I don't know if the emphasis changed, you know, as more money increased in college sports, you know, like you were able to invest a lot more money into a strength coach. People start seeing the importance of having a quality individual and then a quality, like a quality person who knows the science behind the body. I don't know when that shifted, but I mean, we can see in the salaries that, I mean, these guys do well now. I mean, the guy at Iowa, he was almost making $1 million a year. The guy out here in Oregon, he makes $650. I don't know how much Luke Day make, but I know he's doing. I know he's not hurting for any meals.
He's doing.
And then you have a staff. I mean, you just have a huge staff, but because it is so important. You know, I mean, it's that. You know, I hate to term it like this, but that's their investment. I mean, that's their product going out there. You know, if we're looking at it in that terms, you know, I know that's inhumane to say, but they have to protect what's paying their bills, really, at the end of the day. I mean, these players, without the players, they wouldn't have a job. So you need to invest as much as you can in nutrition, much as you can in the weight room with quality people. And that's what South Carolina's doing, you know? So you got to take every measure and get every competitive advantage that you can, you know? So it's important. It's important, Mike.
And according to public records, for anyone that is interested, Luke Day is making $400,000.
Not bad day at the office.
Not bad. You can buy yourself more than just a 32-inch TV. You can get that 40 and work your way up. I do want to ask you something, though. We talk about dedication. I kind of want to pivot a little bit because it is the 22nd today, and it is a very, very special person's birthday. And I would be remiss not to bring his name up. That is Kirk Collinsworth. Kirk has gone to every game, home, away, bowl games, since November 21st, 1992. I think a lot of people remember that game. I believe that was the Steve Tannehill game in Clemson, if I'm not mistaken, and hopefully I have that right. I should have.
Mike, is that the year we joined the SEC as well? I believe that was the year South Carolina joined the SEC.
Trying to remember, I should know this. It is the 30th anniversary, July 1st, 1991.
91.
But I bring up Kirk because this guy, for people that don't know about Kirk's background, you know, what makes his streak even more impressive is that he was born with cerebral palsy. And I've done many stories on him, whether it be during my time at Watch Fox, whether it be just, you know, little bumps on social media. He was able to still find ways to go to these games. With a lot of stadiums, especially during the 90s, not having elevators or not having elevators in certain sections. So, you know, you might see Kirk cruising around in his little, I don't know if it's a Rascal, but we'll call it that. His Rascal scooter, but he also has his walker, and, you know, he'd go up those stairs. And I mean, there's been many times, you know, he told me that during that time period that he'd fall, you know, trying to go upstairs or whatnot, because he wanted to go to these games. And he's always found a way, but there's just a great freaking quote that he told me. Cause I remember, like, you know, having a conversation with him at one point last year, and Kirk was like, you know, you always see me happy. And I said, yeah, And he said, you know, the reason why I'm always happy is because I know there's someone out there that has it worse than me. So if a guy like Kirk Collinsworth, everything that he's been dealt with, can say freaking happy all the time. I'm sure he gets a little pissed off sometimes when his Gamecocks lose, but for the most part, he's always happy. I think, you know, it just speaks volumes of just who the guy is and just the heart he has. But I know, obviously, as a player, Marcus, I'm sure that you have a special place in your heart for Kirk. Nick, as a student, I'm sure that, you know, you've seen Kirk around and it inspires you guys, even when it is 100-something degrees, to pile on into the student section.
Well, yeah, I echo that, Mike. Kirk is like a walking well of wisdom. And he's like, he's the definition of, like, what happens when you wake up and you embrace the day. You know, because, I mean, it's just every time you see him, there's a it's a light. Every time you see him. So, happy birthday, Kirk. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday. Enjoy your day. And just thank you for bringing so much light into the world. I mean, it's just, I know every time I see you, my spirits are lifted. It's because of how you go about life. You know, you're the definition of what it means to be. Like, gratitude is like it's not really like an attitude. It's like you choose gratitude. You choose to be grateful every day. And that's what you taught me. So happy birthday.
Yeah. No, happy birthday. And I just want to say, Gamecock fan or not, he would inspire me any day. It doesn't matter when, like, I mean, yes, when you see him, you're just, yeah, you're just so happy. Honestly, you're just happy. But whether I was a Gamecock fan or not, he would bring me joy and inspire me, because to have that outlook, like Marcus said, I mean, there are so many days, everyone has it, where you don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to attack what you have to do that day. But getting up and hearing his outlook makes you want to get up and attack your day, like he said. And just, you know, there are a lot of, like, I mean, if you look around and you go through, there's a lot of people who are in, you know, recovery programs and getting help with mental health and stuff, and they always talk about gratitude lists. First thing they do when they wake up is they do a gratitude list. What are you thankful for? And that puts you in such a better mental space for that day, because when you're thinking about what you're grateful for, you're not thinking about all the crappy things. You're thinking about those good things in your life. And that just puts you in such a better mindset when you wake up and that's how you start your day, not dreading what you're going to do, but being excited because you get to do something, you get to do it. It just changes your outlook. And so, I mean, he's inspiring for so many different reasons. So happy birthday to him.
Yeah. And Marcus, just as a player, when do you think a lot of these games, I mean, these Gamecocks have to know who Kirk is, right? Like, at some point, the guys have to know, or at least hear about him, just because he's freaking everywhere, man. He's absolutely everywhere. And I think the amazing thing is, for these players, once they find out who he is, I think it only makes them just appreciate him even more.
No doubt. No doubt. I mean, even if he's at every sporting event, you know, like it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter where you are. I mean, you probably see him around Columbia too. I tell you what, you as a Carolina player, you are, it's cool. Because you become a celebrity, all right? That's just a fact. You become a celebrity within the society. Really in South Carolina, and you come across so many people, that support you on Saturday, or they have so many fond memories of watching the game, or I mean, it's just that instant connection, like no matter where you go. And you come across some fans, some supporters, supporters of the university that you just, you never, you, like, even if you want it, I mean, if you come across 10 to 20,000 people in your career, even if you wanted to, you couldn't forget some certain people. And it's just like because of the impact that they made on you. You know, it's not the impact that you made on them. You know, it's the fact that, man, you really see, okay, this means a lot to this person. Like, it penetrates your mind, the fact that how important South Carolina sports are. And it also, like, gives you a perspective of, like, what you can do. Like, what, because this is so important, like, what you can do with this platform. Mm-hmm. All right, because it is a platform to create positive change long after you're gone. Like, it shows that when you meet somebody like Kirk. Because, I mean, this is such a great, it's a great way to, number one, occupy your time on this earth, like, mm-hmm. supporting something else, being a supporter and not a fair weather supporter, you know, not somebody that is up and down or depends on who they hire or it depends on all of the internal logistics that you can't control as a fan or a supporter. Like, all of those things go out the window. You know, it's unwavering, unconditional support from somebody like that. And it's like, man, there's a lot more people out there like that. I can make a huge difference with this platform. That's the kind of perspective, like, when you meet somebody like Kirk, that's what it does for you as a player. Like, I can make a difference in this state. And I don't even have to touch the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you don't have to be the star. You don't have to be the carry-on, you know, to make a difference as a player at Carolina. But simply because you put on that jersey, you now have license to, I mean, just impact a lot of people that you don't even know yet.
Another person I need to give a shout-out to, I know – he's another person that Gamecock players really appreciate, but he's helped Kirk out a lot with traveling, and this man has been to 448 straight Gamecock games, and that is Chris Fulmer from the Ultimate Tailgaters. So, Chris, of course, tremendous, tremendous supporter of the Gamecocks, and got some really good barbecue too. Chris Fulmer, that barbecue so dang good does.
You know what's underrated? That mac and cheese, too.
By the way, 448 games Chris has been to. And like I said, he's helped out Kirk a lot in some of the situations where Kirk wasn't able to go get a ride, some of the times they do the fan buses, and Chris has helped him out. Let's get to some questions, though, guys. Oh, by the way, Kirk, and I always bust Kirk's balls. We just give crap to each other back and forth. We have a good friendship. I told him, you know, I take all those pictures with him and Beamer every week as Beamer comes over during Carolina calls. I said, one day, Kirk, I said, I'm just going to, you know, Photoshop your shirt and put a Clemson logo on, you know, start calling you Tiger Kirk. He's going to kill me once he hears this on the podcast. So he's the farthest thing from that. But I know if he's listening to this, he's probably shaking his head, ready to throw the phone across and ready to run me over next time I see him. So I love you, bud. Let's get to some questions. We got some good ones this week. Got some good ones this week for Marcus. And as always, Nick, depending on what the question is, you can chime in as well. This is going to be, make sure I read this number right, USC 9195. And just a reminder, if you want to ask a question, if you're a Gamecock Central subscriber, be sure to look for the Ask Marcus Anything thread that we throw up there. And we threw this one up the other day. But again, this is USC 9195. It says, Marcus, who was the guy on offense that improved the most from one season to the next during your time? Connor seems to be the obvious pick, but maybe Bruce or Justice?
That's a really good question. That improved the most over our career. When I was there, golly. It was beautiful to see Ronald Patrick. Carolina fans will know that name. He was a guard. He improved. I mean, he came in at 260. He left at 300. He was a left guard, right guard. Did a lot of our pulling plays. He was just a massive. I mean, his numbers, his bench, his squad, everything went up. That's a Connor. Yeah, I like that answer as well. Connor improved every year. I mean, he got better, and I mean, obviously became the. This is debatable. I know. God, I was about to say something. He became the greatest quarterback to ever play at Carolina. You know, I know that's debatable, but Justice. Golly, that's a good one. Justice Cunningham. He went on to play for the Colts for 2 years, a couple years. I know Devin Taylor was a really, really good story. I mean, he came in. I mean, we all know he was a freak athletically. He was 6'8", 235 pounds when he came in. He probably left for around 250, but I mean, just the way he could bend his body at that height, he improved a lot. That was a really good question. Yeah, to answer, I'd probably say Ronald Patrick, though, in my opinion. Ronald Patrick, he came in 260, redshirted, you know, ended up being a huge part of our success the last 2 years. You know, the offensive line, defensive line, you know. My mind goes to those two positions first always because they're so important. And it's a developmental position. So I'd say Ronald Patrick.
Nick, I don't know if there's anyone from a fan perspective just during your time period of watching the Gamecocks. I mean, for me, the one that stands out just from covering them since 2016, I would say Parker White. I think that's probably the best that I've seen in terms of just the
growth.
I mean, I think people forget that if it wasn't for Will Muschamp sticking it out with him, he might not have been the kicker to finish the end of that season when he had a rough start. So I'd say Parker White.
Yeah, I mean, to go from rough start to, I mean, now he's the leading scorer in Gamecock football. Like, you can't really argue with that one. And the other thing I was going to say, Marcus just said, I mean, debatably the greatest quarterback in Gamecock history, but either way, Connor's a legend. He's a legend. Mm-hmm. Like in Columbia, no matter what, it doesn't matter. He's a legend. So I just wanted to say that.
And it's crazy to think what might have not been if things didn't play out the way that they did with Steven Garcia, because, you know, Connor wouldn't have had that opportunity to come in at that time period. And, you know, that's everything happens for a reason.
I mean, isn't it undefeated at Willie B in his time?
It's a stupid stat.
I remember someone said to me, was like, oh, yeah, I went to USC. Oh, I was there the 4 years Shaw was undefeated. And I was like, why was I not just older or something? I didn't go to South Carolina years earlier. Because, I mean, imagine just being there at that time would have been ridiculous. Like,
baseball was winning left and right. I mean, shoot. I mean, I've had conversations with Jackie Bradley about it, just watching the football because he's a big football fan. And then obviously, you know, Marcus, I mean, you've talked about it before, watching what baseball was doing. I mean, it was a special freaking time. Yeah. It was a special time to be a Gamecock fan. We'll keep moving things along, guys. We've got a bunch of them this week. This is from Huger, I believe. And I know how to say Hugie. This is not Hugie.
I was thinking of it.
They ask, you know, Marcus, how did it feel running through the Georgia defense in 2010 as a true freshman, racking up 182 yards and two touchdowns?
Honestly, I was, if I'm being like just completely real, I was running for my life. I mean, like them dude, like I remember walking out there, the coin toss, and these dudes, man, they're so huge. Like I'm talking about gigantic. I see a fifth year senior. I can't think of his name right now, but he played for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think he's still in the NFL. I saw him. He was like 6'4", 270. And I saw this linebacker who was like 260. I'm just like, God damn, like these dudes are big. I mean, that's what went through my mind. I was just like, I'm really out here with these, with these monsters. Man, I was running for my life. I was running for my life. I was running just, it was the, I guess I had so much success that day because I was just playing. I was free. Like it was just the freest I'd been. It was almost like I went out there with nothing to lose because it was my first start. And, you know, the week before I got into the game and I had a little bit of success, but I did not expect to start that next week against Georgia. But Coach Graham saw something in me, Coach Spurrier saw something in me that I did not at that time in my career. How did it feel, man? How did it feel? I tell you what, I didn't get tired. It was like an out of body experience. It was that because it was the coming out party. It was the first because I was just like, fuck it, I'm gonna give my all. Whatever happens. I'm just out there running. I was like a little kid. It felt free. It felt free, and you know, in the fourth quarter. When I know we had like just worn them down, like they were done. They were done. We had ran the ball down their throat that day. And then the crowd just started to get loud. I was just like, okay, this is college football. It was great. Great day.
I think the player that you're referring to is Justin Houston.
Justin, oh my goodness. How did you know that, Mike? Justin Houston. Mm-hmm. That dude walked out at coin toss.
6'3", right now, or at least because he's with the Baltimore Ravens right now. He, like you said, was in Kansas City from 2011 to 2018, played with the Colts for two seasons, and then signed with the Ravens last year. But he, I just looked it up, 6'3", 270 pounds. So. Jeez. I don't know what his playing weight was, or maybe I could find it real quick. All right. His pre-draft measurables, just under 6'3", 270 pounds. So mm-hmm. He's been consistent. Bench press 30 times, vertical 36 and a half, ran a 4.7. Arm length, or I'm looking for, okay. I don't have. I was looking for something out. Broad jump, 10'5". He was just a freak athlete, and you got. I don't want to say little old Marcus. I mean, Marcus, you had obviously some size with you when you were a freshman, but you were a freshman, and you're seeing that on the other side.
I was physically smaller, but I was also like mentally like, oh shit, I don't like. I thought to myself like, damn, am I ready for this? Like that, I went back to the sideline. I'm like, am I ready for this? After seeing him, and then he had a bald head. You know, he came out with no helmet on. He had this bald, so he looked like he was 35, 40 years old. I'm just like, and I'm 18. I'm just like, am I truly ready for this? But
I mean, it shows how much confidence can do for you. When you got right. in, started moving, like you said, the crowd picked up. I mean, that's such a huge part. If you start believing in yourself, I mean, from there, you can do a lot more.
That's
Marcus, you don't have to go Marcus, you don't have to go super deep on these because there's a couple of them, so we can just try to keep things moving to keep this thing around an hour. But the other question they have, and we're going to get back to that bald point that you brought up, you know, was the FSU hit clean or questionable?
Clean.
I don't even know what the hit he's talking about.
Oh, I got it. Either. I was knocked out. Knocked out cold. Cold. It was, I mean, it was clean. I didn't see him coming, you know? So I caught the ball, but I didn't see him. And it was, I mean, it was clean.
Someone, now I see it. And they put like a Friday thing to it, if you know what I'm talking about. Greg Reed was the player. And I haven't seen this before.
I haven't either. I'm watching it right now.
Yeah, that was.
And I see it. Yeah, that's a nice hit. There's no other way to put it. But shoot, you got right back up, buddy. You took some hits in your career. I mean, that's the thing about running back, especially during the time period you played, because, yeah, there was targeting, but it was not the exact same way that they do it now. Right. So, I mean, it was a different game back then. There's no question about it. Now I'm going to sound like one of the old basketball players saying it was a different ball game. You know, back in my day.
I'm surprised there really was a debate on that. Did he get your head?
It was my jaw.
Like, yeah, so because it, I mean,
he hit. Oh,
he
gotcha.
Like he dropped the shoulder. I mean,
out.
Because I agree. Like,
he hit me like right here, and it was.
See, that's the thing. You can't see from the TV angle. I mean, I didn't look at it from like a different view. I wasn't gonna sit here and just watch clips of you getting knocked out. It's the last thing I wanted to do, right. You know, when I see one of my boys get hit. But yeah, you got up, man. All right. Speaking about bald, Cocksure says, if bald people work in a restaurant, do they still need to wear a hairnet? Little change of pace question.
No.
I'd say no.
No.
I think they are required, though.
I mean, if you're clean shaven, your head.
You good.
Okay.
You're good to go.
Cocksure has been waiting his whole life for Marcus to answer that question, Nick. Marcus, this is a good one. I'm trying to read this person's name because I think they use a number. So it's supposed to be like a Lange. L4NGF0RB. And I'm sure that says a word. Lange Forb. Sorry if I'm butchering that. Is there a preferred blocking scheme for a running back?
I defer to the offensive line because, I mean, that's who we need to be able to adjust off them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I defer to that. I mean, it's, you know, they're pretty universal. You got full slide, you got half man, half slide, half the line sliding, half the line has, sorry about that, half the line has a man. Do I prefer? Not really. I mean, no preference. No preference, really. I mean, you just got to be able to adjust to whatever the offensive line is doing. I tell you, that there's situations where, I mean, no, I'm not going to go in depth on that. There's no preference.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what you say about this one. This is from B Guns. If the teams he, well, I'm guessing I'll word it the way that he wrote it. If the teams he was on had a quarterback like Rattler, would they have won a national championship? And you played with some good
teams. I was on.
And you played with some good quarterbacks.
Nah, I mean we.
You're rolling with your guys.
We were fine. Mm-hmm. We're fine. Garcia, Connor Shaw, Dylan Thompson. I mean, nah. And it's all a scheme thing as well. You know, mm-hmm. the scheme plays a big part into it. They were perfect for that, for what Coach Spurrier wanted to do. Rattlers good for what we're doing
mm-hmm.
now. So, you know.
We'll try to crank these last three out. Speaking about Spurrier, this is from Z. This is what happens. I need to get glasses. Z Bark 4. What do you think makes a winning culture, and how did Spurrier build for those past teams?
His reputation spoke a lot for itself. You know, he brought his swag. He brought himself. He brought a confidence. What are the components of a healthy culture? It's all the things that we discussed earlier. You know, it's you know, what is that strength staff like? Are players holding each other accountable? Have you, as a coach, have you done a good job of like giving the leaders ownership? What's happening outside the walls? You know, when they're not there, do they hang out? They don't have to be best friends, but do they have a relationship with each other? Do they trust each other? Winning culture, trust. I mean, it's what Beamer's building. I mean, that's for certain. I think, you know, name of the game, the name of life is responding to adversity. So being a resilient team, how do you gel resilience? I mean, I think one thing is trust and being close and knowing that guy has your back. Conditioning, you know, from a physical aspect, can we endure, you know, physically, you know, like, can we endure the trenches of the SEC?
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking directly, the culture I'm speaking directly to, you know, a winning culture in the SEC. Can you endure it? I mean, because it's grueling, you know, my body couldn't endure it. You know, that's something that can be trained in the mind, something trained in the body. All the things that we discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's winning culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I'd say the exact same. I mean, he summed up really well. I'd say also just buying in, getting guys to buy in.
Mm-hmm.
You need everyone on the same page. You need everyone to want to be at the University of South Carolina and want to create a winning culture and be a good SEC football team, which being a good football team in college football and being a good SEC football team, they're different bars. And we want to be a good SEC team and we want to compete. So they got to buy in. And I think that's what Beamer's doing a great job of getting them to do that. But that's a key part.
Last two. I don't know if Marcus is going to be able to really talk about this one, but I'll read it anyway, and you can always defer, Marcus. This is by Cox by 20. And maybe we can tweak this around a little bit, because I know you're not going to snitch anyone out. What schools offered you improper benefit football? Was there any significant cash? Let me rephrase that. I mean, you can answer it that way, but what was maybe one of the craziest things someone offered you, and you don't have to say the school, that of a school that you didn't go to, and you don't have to answer that, but I'm trying to find a way to be able to ask you this without having to.
Was the question what school?
Yeah, I know you won't do that. It's kind of like an oath.
He just went for it. He was just like, I'm just gonna ask.
was there anything crazy from a school, and you don't have to say the name, like what were some of the, like the craziest things that were offered to you that you declined to go to some of these schools? Because you see this stuff happen. I mean, this isn't anything that people aren't aware of, you know?
Right. A car.
Mm-hmm.
Women.
Is that Tennessee?
We heard that story.
And it wasn't Tennessee. A car, women, not cash outright, never. Never outright cash. Those two. That's it.
Any preference on the car? Do they give you a say?
It was a Benz.
Ooh.
Well, so and now,
I mean, they had picked it for you.
And now you have one of the best quarterbacks in the nation just tweeting that he just got a car and being like, "Oh, I chose this car over this car."
Everybody knows.
It's a media talking point.
And we'll dig deeper one episode about goodness, what Marcus Lattimore's life would have been looking like during the NIL era.
I did a story on NIL and I interviewed Marcus and
jeez.
Oh my gosh, that team, the whole team, would have been doing.
Team full of millionaires.
Yeah.
And a lot of them went on to be millionaires.
Still
are millionaires. Last question, and I'm going to add a sentence to this at the end. This is from Matt. I just want to make sure I'm reading this right. Matt Cali 77. Is there a video of the old ball coach doing the dance during your home visit? And the last part that I'm going to add to that, if it is, if that video does exist, what would it take to be able to get that thing out there?
I could do that. My mom has it.
Mm.
My mom has the video. We could share that.
I don't know if anyone's ever seen it. Like the masses, that is.
Have they? I don't, yeah.
This may have been during like the MySpace days. So, I mean, it wasn't really shared the same way.
This was 2000, early 2010, like January. Late January of 2010. Yeah, there's a video. My mom has it. I can find that video. I call her that.
You make a lot of Gamecock fans happy.
Believe in South Carolina exclusive.
Well, fellas, we appreciate it. I do want to add one more thing before we close things up. I'm going to continue to do this for, I think this might be the last week to vote, or could be. I have to double check. I think we have two more weeks. If you guys are listening to this, be sure to go on to Free Times and vote for Gamecock Central for Best Sports website. We were nominated. We appreciate everyone that's taken some time. It does not take too long. And if you are over that way and want to vote for, I was nominated for Best Sportscaster and Best Local Twitter. If you want to go vote for me on that, I'd deeply appreciate it. But be sure
to vote
for Gamecock Central. Gamecock Central is the one that would be very special. But also, if you're listening to this on iTunes, leave a nice 5-star review. We appreciate that. And go tell someone about Believe in South Carolina. We like the message when it spread for us. So, fellas, we'll do it again next week. We'll get closer to SEC Media Days.
Yes,
stay cool out there, Columbia. Have some water. Mix in some water.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.